There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 3 of the Hunting Collective. Coming to you back home in Austin, Texas. I know number 1, we were in Mexico with Steve Rinella. Number 2, we were in Salt Lake City for the Western Hunting Expo with our boy Ryan Callahan. Two great episodes and great conversations. Number 3, we're back home here in Austin, Texas, and we're joined by Aubrey Marcus. If you're just a hunting fan, if you're a guy that's listening to this connected in the hunting industry, you may not know who Aubrey Marcus is. You may never heard of his company, Onnit, of which he is the CEO, and you may have never heard the term total human optimization. I don't think any of that matters for this conversation, because as you'll find, Aubrey Marcus is a philosopher, he is a deep thinker, he's a man who practices psychedelics to better his life, not to just get the high. And he's one of the more successful people you'll ever meet, both spiritually, you know, personally, and professionally. He just emanates success. He is someone that I greatly admire, not only for what he does and how he speaks. You can find him, of course, on the Aubrey Marcus podcast. They tell me there's 10 million downloads on that thing on iTunes, which is crazy. He just released his own book. It's published by HarperCollins. Own the Day, Own Your Life. Just about optimizing your daily life and getting back to being better. And just to say, there wasn't some arrangement here with Aubrey and I where I would have him on the podcast just to promote the book, as is the general parlance for appearances and stuff like this. I've hunted with Aubrey a couple different times. Bear hunted in Alberta most recently, as you'll hear in the podcast. We had a great time. We connected. He's just a great dude. So when I was thinking about who I'm going to get with to continue this awesome conversation about hunting that we've been having, I thought, what a different mind, what a person to explore this with that Aubrey Marcus is. So that's what I did. I shot him a text. I said, dude, can I come over to Onnit, which is headquarters in Austin, Texas, and just hang with you and have a conversation about what you do and what you think, and open up a little bit of the doors of hunting for Aubrey and let you guys in on what he thinks. And so that's what we did. That's what we did. I know this is a long-winded way of saying welcome to podcast number 3, but anyway, welcome to podcast number 3. Enjoy. Aubrey Marcus, what's up, man?
What's up, Ben?
Oh, just living the dream. I don't know. Everybody says that, but...
No, but you actually might be.
Maybe. I think you might be, too.
I might be.
I might be. Listen, I don't want to get into
why aren't we though? If we're not, then we should be.
Well, let's figure out.
It's our own fault.
Let's figure out if we're not currently living the dream, how we can get there before this hour.
Yeah.
And this hourglass is over. I don't want to get into like, hey, tell us about yourself. I would much prefer you tell me about the time we went bear hunting.
Uh-huh.
And you had experience with a bear.
Yeah.
A psychedelic experience where a bear spoke to you. Am I right? Remember that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've had that experience happen multiple times, and that wasn't actually during the hunting trip. That happened before
right?
And yeah.
Right. So you had that experience, and then we were going bear hunting, and there was a little bit of a like an interaction you were looking for.
Oh, totally.
So tell me, I just want people to hear about that going in. I feel like that informs
them. So yeah, one of the first times I was doing ayahuasca. Ayahuasca is a South American plant concoction that combines a vine, the actual ayahuasca vine, with some DMT containing leaves like chacruna or opiahe or wambisas, these very rich green leaves from the rainforest. And they pound out the vine and they brew it into this tea, and it becomes very psychoactive, psychedelic. And they use it in a lot of their healing practices. Apologies to those of you who know what ayahuasca is, but that's a little bit of the background. So I've gone down there and participated in some of those indigenous ceremonies, and it seems like you have contact with other entities, other visions that come. And maybe these come from your own mind, or maybe these come from somewhere else. It doesn't really matter, because they're very instructional and educational and very profound on your life. And one of the visions with a bear happened. Like a rookie.
John Dudley.
John Dudley.
Should we have John Dudley come into the podcast? John Dudley. What is that noise? Hey, I'm podcast with Aubrey Marcus right now. You're interrupting.
What's up, John?
Hey, what's up, brother?
Not much, man.
What are you doing right now?
I'm driving back from Oklahoma from the slaughter fest.
That's what we call hunting. When John Dudley goes out, it's a slaughter fest.
Yeah, he's so accurate.
Yeah, it's no longer hunting. It's killing. It's killing everybody. Well, we just want to say hi, and I'll call you back later, and we'll talk. We'll talk.
All right. Thanks for the book, Aubrey.
You're welcome, brother. You're welcome, man. Yeah, look forward to catching up with you.
All right. We'll catch up later. Have a good one.
All right, sounds good.
Bye.
Always gonna have a special guest. We had that my first
podcast. Yeah, you had that planned out. That's lucky. I like that.
Especially when it's John Dudley. Thank you, John Dudley.
So anyways, I'm in this visionary state and I get this image of a bear, and the bear is like weighted down with all these gold chains and a crown. And he's like wrestling against it, and he's like trying to move, but he's just like, he's like covered in chains, like more than Mr. T, like way more than Mr. T, just chains weighing him down all over the place. And he's trying to move and trying to run, but he can't because the gold is so heavy. And I'm watching him do this, and he looks at me, the bear in my vision, and goes, you know, I remember before I had all these gold chains and this crown when I used to be able to run free just like a bear. And then instantly it like flashed back to his younger self before he had all this wealth and accumulation and status. And I'm the king bear when here's all my wealth. And he was just charging through the forest. And then I was like, became like one of the bears, and we were like charging through the forest together. And it was this really cool, like visual representation and reminder of, you know, a bear really stores all of his wealth on himself. It's free to roam and rub trees and chase things down and fight and fuck and do all the things. It has no attachments to anything, and then it just goes to sleep and wears it off. Whereas in that image, when the bear started to become more like a human and wear his wealth externally, then it actually slowed him down. It actually prevented him from being what he really was at his core, which is an animal that liked to roam and liked to be free. And, you know, it's very much an analogy for what we humans do to ourselves, tied to our houses and cars and possessions and wealth, and always concerned about this or that and our status and, oh, are we king or are we not king, whatever, all of this nonsense that prevents us from actually being the human organism that we are.
Yeah. No, I found that I remember you telling me that on the drive up to camp.
Yeah.
And the goal was maybe not to like face down a bear and figure all that out, but that was you had that, you know, psychedelic relationship with a bear that, mm-hmm. that it struck me as that I would never encounter someone in the hunting community that would have that relationship, or at least mental acuity to be like, I have this relationship with a bear. It's a psychedelic one.
Yeah, yeah.
It came in a different world that I, you know, I took ayahuasca and then I experienced that. So I always thought how different your perspectives are based on who you are and what you do and the experiences that you've had that very few people that I've met, you know, outside of.
Yeah, I mean, I have a deep connection with that animal and the symbolism of that animal. I mean, you can track it back to some of the Druid lore where, you know, the Druid name for bear is Art, and that was, you know, Arthur is like the bear king. You know, it's like it's a symbol of kind of they're the king of the forest in that way, just as the lion might be the king of the jungle. Lions aren't even in jungles. That's a weird saying, right?
That's a movie that we came up with.
But, you know, so there's from that saying to this other, I bought a ranch at the foot of Bear Mountain. It's like this animal that just keeps coming up in multiple ways, but I hadn't had any visceral experience with the bear. So I went and, you know, prepared to hunt one, but I knew that if the bear was coming, you know, it would show itself and I would know that was the one, that was the one. And, you know, I was calling out and seeing if that was going to be the time where I would have that, you know, hunting death experience where I'd actually be able to consume the flesh of that bear, but that bear didn't appear. I had, you know, young sows and, you know, different other bears. Nothing actually came that I could take a shot at, but it was still an awesome experience because I'm there in the woods and, you know, in some cases 10 feet away from bears and you get to see their curious little personalities and this, how natural they are, as an animal and got to understand them. So while I didn't get to kill and consume one in the same way, like that experience was still incredibly awesome for me.
Well, and you get to learn a bit of the natural history of the animal, you know, learn about what it ate, where it lived, what it was.
Yeah, like man. Only in like really observing it and being super quiet and being super focused and like being completely in tune with your surroundings. I mean, that's the awesome thing about it. You're on the ground with bears and there's other gnarly bears around there. And, you know, like you have to kind of be focused.
Well, that's the thing about bears, especially is that black bears where we were in Alberta. Those bears are, for all intents and purposes, docile. Like they emote this like docile nature. Mm-hmm. And when you're 10 feet away from them, you're not, I don't know what your experience was, but my experience wasn't to immediately curl back and be defensive. It was to be aware, like to be aware it was there, but also at the same time, you know, not go run and hide and crawl on a tree. I found that to be, but you also understand you're at the mercy of the nature of that bear. If that bear decides it wants to rip your face off, it has every ability to do it. And there's not a whole lot at that point you can do about it. So the unpredictable nature of that animal still exists, even though you feel like you're in this quiet, serene observation mode. You can never switch off that, your own animal mode.
Because when those bears start creeping towards you, you know, you don't want to show fear, right? Like you want to just like check them a little bit, like, hey, you know, they go, hey, oh no, nothing. I was just exploring,
sniffing around. What you doing, bro? What you doing? But that's one thing, like in the podcast that I've tried to put out there, the first couple that we've done, the most feedback I've got is the conversation of value systems going into hunting, like how we value the animal. I think anybody that goes hunting. We'll talk a little bit more about your history in it and then kind of what you want to do in the future. But anybody that goes hunting assigns a value to the animal that they're hunting. We discussed like in the hunting bubble, what that looks like. Maybe it's not always the best value. We may outwardly value the animal, but internally we may fetishize its antlers or, you know, some part of it that isn't the nature of hunting in and of itself. When that experience, any other hunt you've been on, how do you find that you explain the value of that animal as you go? I mean, it's a good, that psychedelic experience and the relationship, I think maybe touches on that a little bit, but is there a deeper?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I ever appreciated meat until I went hunting. You know, like as conscious, quotation marks, as I try to be and as spiritually in tune as I try to be, you know, I ate cheeseburgers with fucking impunity. You know, I ate steaks and tenderloins with fucking impunity. You know, this was just meat. I hadn't been part of the slaughtering process. I hadn't been part of the hunting process. And, you know, I had obviously an understanding like, all right, this food came from an animal. I'm not deluding myself. But I didn't really get it until, you know, I went and hunted my first, you know, black buck. It was a black buck doe that was the first animal that I successfully hunted. And that just recalibrated everything. And it was really interesting because, you know, for me, that act, you know, I've been part of Native American spirituality, South American spirituality, where hunting is kind of part of, it's just part of life. And there is no distinction between your spiritual life and your hunting life and your sex life and all of this. It's all just kind of woven together. And so for me, you know, I did my best to, you know, I was hunting with a rifle at that point. I wasn't adept enough with a bow to try and take one out. So, you know, before we went out, I said a little prayer over the gun and over the bullets so that the, you know, it would be accurate and swift, and, you know, then went out and finally at the end of a really long day, found a doe and took the shot. It was clean, and then came and, you know, ran over and it was still alive. And I had a small pocket knife that my uncle gave me, not pocket knife, like a holstered sheath knife. Yeah. And, you know, kind of put my hand over it and put the knife through its heart to kill it. And at that moment, there was just nothing but this feeling of just profound gratitude. Like some of the most, you know, and I said another little prayer there of thank you to the animal, but there's this profound love for that animal. And that's something I think that non-hunters would never understand. And like at that moment, it's probably the most I've ever loved an animal that wasn't like my dog or something like that. Yeah. Like I've never loved an animal more than that moment as I had my hands on its still warm body. And it was just this radical expression of gratitude. And that was just a total game-changing, paradigm-shifting moment for me. It was like, holy shit, this animal that was once alive that I was watching track down the things, it's now died and it's now going to feed me. Yeah. You know, and right now, even now, its skin is underneath my altar at home. And every day that I go in to meditate, you know, I light candles on it and I see it, and, you know, the meat's long gone, but it's still there with me in that moment. Even more importantly, it's still there. But it wasn't even just that moment of that profound love and gratitude for the animal. It was the process of skinning it and then quartering it and then feeling like, oh, I understand why, you know, why these different parts are softer than these muscles, why the haunches are harder because they're the muscles that are more sinewy used for climbing and running, and why the tenderloin's softer because that muscle's only used for quick cuts and it doesn't get used all the time. And, you know, how the back strap is another one of those muscles that like every different part, like you get it. And then so like when I order those parts, I'm like, oh, no, I know, even if it's a cow, like I get it. Like I get what part of the animal this is from. Yeah. And man, it's like, I think it should be like a fucking prerequisite that you should have like a meat eating license. And that's, your meat eating license, I was saying this to somebody, should be you have to hunt and fucking butcher something.
Well, I said, what if if you want to have a steak, you had to go down to your local butcher shop or some factory farm and take a nail gun and whack a cow in the head. You had to then gut the cow, pull its guts out, butcher it, pack it up, ship it out. And then once you're done that, they're like, thanks, you passed the class, passed a little test. You get a little laminated card that says you can have steak now. And then you go to the store and they're like, sir, I'd like to see your license. Like, you want that ribeye? I'd like to see your license. And you're like, oh, okay, well, here's my cow license. I don't have my chicken license yet, but I'm working on it.
Yeah, man.
That's what hunting is like. It's like getting your deer license. It's like understanding 100%. Now that this piece of venison is something more than that. And the other thing I would, you know, that strikes me from what you were just saying is that when something dies that you love and you appreciate, you feel gratitude, right? Mm-hmm. If one of your family members dies or your dog dies or just anything leaves the earth that you appreciate and love and have a relationship with, you feel gratitude and sorrow. And, you know, there's a lot of emotions that go with that. Everybody doesn't have the same ones, but I think one thing we've never discussed as hunters is that those emotions are natural because that's something has just left the earth and by your hand that you went out into the woods. You didn't put that deer there, but you took it away.
Yeah.
And appreciation is one of the things you feel, gratitude when somebody dies that you love.
Yeah. And I think maybe there's an impulse to kind of hurry through those emotions. And it's like, you're not a tough or a real hunter. If you want to be like those action heroes, you know, that kill somebody and have some witty one-liner and a blasé smile or something, you know, but like, I think it's cool to take that moment, you know, take your moment, do you, like maybe if that is you and the first thing your instinct is for a chuckle or whatever, and that's your authentic expression, whatever, I'm not going to judge that, but like, don't feel compelled to play a role. Don't play like the badass hunter guy. Like if you want to take a moment and cry a tear or two, like do it, you know, and if you're with somebody who wants to do that, don't fucking make them feel like a pussy for doing it, you know, like to allow people to have this experience in their most authentic way and know that, you know, there's no one way that makes you better or worse for doing that. Like have that, you know, have that experience.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meat eater. That's OReillyAuto.com/meat eater. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Yeah, you feel... You have different feelings now when you eat a steak or you eat chicken or just
you know, I can forget, you know, like I can certainly like eat a chicken tender and dip it in ranch and buffalo and not think at all about the chicken, probably because I don't have my chicken license. I need to get my chicken license.
We'll work.
But it's true though, even what you said about your cow license, like it would probably be better for me if I did butcher a cow, you know, because I certainly 100% of the time, if I go to like Lonesome Dove and get the venison or the elk or something like that, that's like, I get it. I understand what I'm eating and there's like a much deeper appreciation. But, and cows, I'll try to get there, but I sometimes just slip up. And sometimes it's just a steak and sometimes it's just a cheeseburger and sometimes it's just a sausage. And so I think it would be healthy for me physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, if I hunted more. And I just need to make the time to do that. Like that is a personal practice that would assist my, you know, evolution as a human being. And I would, you know, dare to say probably all the different animals that I eat, you know, from fishing, you know, and actually cleaning the fish. That's something I haven't really done. I usually catch the fish and then bring them somewhere and then they get clean and then they get fished. That's not the whole thing. That's just pulling and reeling. Like you got to go through the whole process. You cannot rob yourself of that experience.
There would be a lot of licenses you got to get. Yeah. I mean, it would be, it'd take you a while.
Yeah. I mean, I have got that with the like spearfishing. You know, spearfishing, I've gone and done the whole deal. Like I did that in Hawaii and that's super dope.
Even to me, I love, you know, we have some guys that work there that deliver tuna steaks every once in a while. And I love this tuna steak and it's one of the most delicious things I've ever eaten. But I feel weird. Yeah. I feel in my home, I'm always eating something that I pull out of the freezer. I mean, look at the vacuum seal package. Oh, cool. Access to your Hawaii 917.
Yeah.
Perfect. Remember really quick.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah,
I remember that time where I missed 8 of them and then I shot this one and I was excited. And you remember that. So, like, I feel like in my home, you know, store-bought meat's unwelcome because it feels weird sure. now. Not, you know, not that, you know, I live in some temple or something. I just live in a house. But I feel as though this kind of like lunch meat is a little bit unwelcome in some ways. Yeah. I talked with my wife about that. And she said, well, you need to kill some more turkeys this year because I want some white meat.
Right.
So that was the conversation we had last week is how do we achieve this in its whole as opposed to, you know, just kind of living half-assed at it. And which, you know, it'd be hard to go out to a restaurant and be like, here's this elk, I killed it. Could you cook it up and then bring it over to me?
Sure.
So you have to hedge your bets. But I feel like my home, being a place where I live and I cultivated that place, I kind of want that to be that dinner table.
Yeah, if sacred. You can, you should.
Yeah.
You know, and then if you can't, you got to at least once or twice. You know, if you're going to, you got to do it. You got to go all the way. Like we're... Ritual is a big thing for me in my close inner circle, and we have a bunch of very close friends, and you know, we're always trying to think of different ways that we can kind of challenge each other and see things about each other. And my fiance Whitney is a way better hunter than me, a lot more experienced, and just she's like a savant. It's like she's
better at most things than everybody. Yeah,
she just feels the heart of the animal and just shoots. Like I've never seen anybody, and I've been with a lot of really good hunters, I've never seen anybody that sight and shoot faster. It's like, I mean, it's like a military operation, you know, like Tim Kennedy, like seeing a fucking insurgent, like that kind of speed is just, she just, as soon as the crosshairs hit across, like the gun goes off and it's just shocking for everybody around. And she hits them through the heart every time. And anyways, like, so her, and she's gone through the process a bunch, and she wants to take her girlfriends, like, through that process. Most of them eat meat, but, you know, they're like, hunting, you know, and she's like, no, like, nah, bitch, well, let's go.
nah, bitch, let's go.
Like, you gotta know this. You gotta feel what this feels like. This is part of being a human. This is the ante to the game that you're playing. You know, you don't have to be fucking world-class, you know, poker player here, but you gotta ante up.
Yeah. Well, when was the first time you had the urge to go hunting? Because I know it wasn't.
Well, that was as a kid, you know, but I was hunting I was just killing then. That urge to kill is something that's like deep in us. And my parents gave me carte blanche on the rabbits and squirrels because they were garden ravaging little beasts. And so they were like, yeah, take them all as you want. And I had a bow then, and I would be just trying all day roaming around my 10-acre property just looking to blast. Just
shooting the ears off rabbits. Yeah,
totally, man. I was savage. You know, and those moments of, I hated actually when I shot it because then I had to go finish them, you know, if it wasn't like a clean shot. And like, that was like this really shocking experience because I had no purpose behind it. But the art and the skill of like trying to kill this thing with just a string. I didn't even have sights on my bow, so I was shooting instinctive. So instinctive compound bow, and I'm just kind of roaming around and trying to catch these things. I mean, that was something that I was really drawn to. But then when you actually do it, and this animal's like squealing, and you're like a 10-year-old, 11-year-old kid, and you're like, stop yelling, you know, and you just try and find something to finish it off with. You know, that was definitely a more traumatic experience than probably I was bargaining for. But that impulse to hone those skills is, I think, something that's innate and inborn in humans. And I just wish I'd had someone who could, you know, like me, if I had a kid, you know, I wouldn't just say, hey, kids, yeah, go kill all the things in our yard. Like, no, let's go do
this. See that thing running around four legs? Yeah. Put a hole in it.
Like I would, you know, try to show them that the right way so they could harness that impulse in a more productive way.
And you took a break from hunting for a stretch.
Yeah, so I went from killing, and then I did some bird hunting. That was probably the most consistent hunting. I would go see a family friend out in Maryland, and he had a lodge. We'd hunt some ducks and hunt pheasants and stuff like that. So did some bird hunting, but it was a long time before I went back to you know, anything with fur, and fishing was consistent. And, but yeah, that was, you know, it was only four or five years ago that I had my first hunt. And then I went bear hunting with you guys, and I haven't been back. And it's not from lack of desire. It's just from, you know, lack of prioritization. I also haven't set foot on a golf course in 2 years, too. Yeah. Both of those things I'd really like to remedy.
You got a few things going on.
I do. But man, I'm like super eager to get back. The only thing that scratched the itch, which I'd love, is spearfishing.
Yeah.
Spearfishing is like snorkeling and hunting had a baby. It's fucking awesome.
Dude, I got to do that.
I've never done it. Oh my God.
I'm going to Hawaii in like 2 months and
you've
got to do it.
It's like the best of both of those things.
I'm done. I'm doing it.
It's incredible. I mean, there's the gun one, and the gun one's dope, but you know, it takes like a super long time to reload, and it's kind of tricky because you got these cords and whatever. And if you really, your aim is shitty underwater. I like just the long pole where you just pull the rubber band back and like let it go, because then you can just keep
rolling,
keep blasting.
Yeah. I've got a lot of friends that do it. A lot of guys in Hawaii that I know that are surfers that just live off that stuff.
And yeah.
The stories and the way that they find fish and laying on the bottom, looking like coral and you know, having fish swim right up to you and pop up. I mean, that's hunting.
It's incredible. And you got to have really great control of your breath.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so excited. There are fish are like, look at this asshole.
Sucking in
he's
salt
clearly
water.
Clearly trying to kill. He's like gaff choking and heart's pounding and like 100 beats per minute. I'm not like a great
spear fisher.
I see
your pink fins, Aubrey. Yeah. I know what you're doing, dude. Yeah, now I'm doing it, but we're going to Lanai in a couple of months here. And I'm hoping to let it loose there and just learn.
There's something I saw on Instagram, which if I had a trip plan, I would look into. It's called the Sea Archer Sling. And it's basically like a bow version of a spear gun.
Yeah,
so you pull it back and you shoot it like a bow. And
it's
got
to take you back to when you were a kid chasing it. Yeah,
totally. Except now there's a purpose, because every time I've gone spearfishing, I've eaten that animal within, you know, the next 3 hours.
What a better. And I think that's the difference I was talking to somebody about. Meat and you know, like hunting an ungulate or an animal, and then fishing, the concept is eat it as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Get it out of that fish, fillet it, chop it up, eat it raw, cook it, whatever, but the sooner the better. Mm-hmm. And with meat, if you're doing it right, the idea is let that thing age, let it hang, you know, weeks if you can, mm-hmm. let some mold grow on the outside of it, right. Chop that off and eat it.
Right.
And I always found that to be just a whole different world, especially with spearfishing. You shoot a thing and you want to get it on the boat, take it back and eat it raw. I mean, that's the idea. What kind of different connection is that? I mean, that's literally eating the thing raw, which I hope nobody out there is doing that with deer, but you could.
Good. Little deer, tartar.
Little deer tartar.
Venison tartar.
Yeah. I could cook it a little bit.
But the reef fish that you actually get access to, too, a lot of them don't take hooks. So you get some really interesting flavors, like parrotfish are like, taste like lobster. And it's like amazing. And they like suck the coral off rocks. So, and you have to be careful. There's some like reef-borne fish illnesses you can get. But in general, I've had no issues and it's just been an epic experience.
Well, for me hunting, you know, I grew up hunting, but then later on just kind of getting a closer, you know, relationship with hunting, it drove me to do things like garden and get chickens and when have this, you know, innate desire to go spearfishing because of the way I feel like it's paralleled to hunting. So, I mean, I feel like hunting has led me down a path of sustainability just in seeing, like we were talking about going home and having that option in your house to open the fridge and pull out something that means something to you.
Yeah.
You want to replicate that. So I guess, now that we've covered your history with hunting, I would ask you, you've done a lot of stuff. I mean, you've traveled to countless South American villages and had countless experiences with tribal leaders, and you've written a book. I'm looking at it right now, Own the Day, Own Your Life. I mean, you've kind of become this, and I've enjoyed watching it since I've known you, just this voice for reason, but also just clarity and vision. And just to me, the pragmatism at which you approach giving people advice is what's, it's not shocking, but in a way it is. I mean, most people I find that give advice, give it, you know, with some slant of personal, you know, the personal, they want to get something from you.
Sure.
But I found that just reading your stuff and following along that it's not that for you. It's just wanting to better people's lives and expanding your own mind so you can help other people's expand theirs.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've hunted, you've had this experience, and you've gone and done anything. What are the things that you experienced in your life that would maybe put a different shine on hunting as you know it, like your motivation to go do it, what you get from it, you know, how has it been rounded out in a way?
I think to understand what is an animal, like what are we and what are animals and how, what are the differences, you know, like, and not to romanticize, I think like you get caught in two camps. One is like this romanticization of like, oh, life, you know, so precious, you can't touch it and whatever, you know, like that's not the game. You know, that's not in the natural order. That doesn't abide by truth. But what also doesn't abide by truth is just killing for no reason. Killing isn't a big deal, whatever. You know, so it's finding that middle ground between like who we are and what these animals are. And really understanding that we're all part of, in my understanding, you know, it's a lot of the spiritual practices that I've done, we're all part of the same substrate, you know, and you can call that substrate the universe, you can call that substrate energy, you can call that substrate God. You know, we're all part of this God experience unfolding, this life experience unfolding, this universe experience unfolding. And there's many different ways that it manifests. It manifests in concrete things and kind of rock energy, which is still atomic structures that are moving constantly. We think of rocks as inanimate. They're moving. They're just not alive. And then there's the life things, but then there's things like insects, which are basically like moving rocks. They don't really have free will. Like you take a digger wasp and you can get it to do the same thing over and over again by tricking its environment, right? It's not like a conscious creature. They're like little robots. Mm-hmm. They're alive, but they're like mostly like little robots that'll continue to do the same thing. And how perfect, because they're like the garbage disposals of the earth. Like they need to run like robots. They can't just decide like, not fuck it, I'm not into garbage today. You know, like if the flies decided they didn't, the flies decided they didn't like shit.
This tastes like shit.
Yeah.
This is like, terrible.
Nope.
Sorry.
I'm going to flowers. The bees are killing it on the flower
honey?
Game. Honey is the move.
You serious?
I am
start brewing my own beer.
Like you can't have that if you're a bug, you know? So then, all right, understanding that these are creatures with like less free will, somewhere between a rock and a human, you know, like the structure's there, the movement's there, but that kind of, and then just kind of figuring out what these, you know, the sentience, the will, the personality of these beings and what that really means, you know, and who they are, like who they are, what they are, and then having respect for that and knowing, going kind of consciously into what you're doing. And knowing too that there's, you know, there's this countless abundance of new, like all life is precious, but each individual life really isn't that precious because there's all kinds of other forms that comes through. So it's like this weird paradox where it's like, yes, is that deer absolutely precious? Absolutely. But it's precious as deer collectively. Yeah. That one deer, you know, is precious, but can be sacrificed to feed other things, and that's part of life.
And aren't those the human spectrums? We have one side, the animal rights person, who says that one deer is precious.
Right.
That one deer's life. I love that deer. That deer over there, I love it. And then you got a whole nother group of people that I tend to hang out with that say, I love the idea of deer.
Yeah.
They play a part in this big old tapestry that is nature, and I play a part with them. I kill them to save them.
Yeah.
And there's so much there's so many oxymorons built into those ideas that I think, I often wonder, I've been thinking this a lot more lately, is it impossible or is it semi-impossible to explain what hunting is to someone who's never done it, to accurately depict the complexity both of nature, the natural world, our involvement in it, and then also what historically the hunter has done for that wildlife?
Because bias just jumps in the way.
Yeah.
Like bias jumps in the way. Well, first of all, it is really hard to explain that. I mean, go ahead and start with explaining the feeling of wasabi and orgasm first. Try to explain that to someone who's never experienced.
I like those two examples. I'm going to go with one wasabi because I like it with soy sauce and sushi. Second orgasm.
You know, like you can't explain some things that you haven't really experienced, but and especially with hunting, just bias becomes a monster.
Yeah.
You know, your idea of what it is, and people, oh, I could never do that. Bullshit, you could never do that. If you were hungry enough, if you're a kid, you know, you're mama bear and your kid's looking at you starving and you have an opportunity to hunt and feed it, I for damn sure, you know, you will be the first one out there, you know, whittling a spear and trying to make that shit happen. It's just, it's part of our nature. But with the abundance that we have the luxury of these choices. But let's not get confused. you know, it's just the luxury of choices that are even giving you that option. You know, so it's a funny world that we're just altogether so fucking disconnected from everything, from absolutely every aspect of what it is to be this human primate, you know, from the camaraderie, from the sexuality, from the social bonds, from the tribal bonds, from the practices like the hunting and the gathering and cultivating from your own garden. I mean, that's something too that I think everybody should experience. Eat a vegetable that you watered from a seed and pulled from the ground and washed the dirt off of. Like, that's cool too.
Yeah, well, like, I always think, like, what if somebody just erased your mind and somebody said, here, okay, even with vegetables, because it's kind of hard to do with meat, you could either grow it in the ground, plant it in the ground, I'll give you the seed, I'll even provide the seed to you, grant, and then water it, put it in an environment where it can thrive, grows out of the ground, and then at a time where it's most rich and ready to eat, you pluck it, you cut it up and eat it. Like, that seems pretty good. I mean, it seems like I would appreciate that thing more because I had to work and I had to watch it and I had to understand how it thrived and how it allowed me to thrive. That seems pretty cool. Or what I'm going to do is I'm going to build a maze. And in that maze is going to be lighting and you go through a door. The door will open automatically. You don't even have to pull the door. You go through this and then there's a maze of vegetables, but they're just in boxes. And they're all like the best kinds of vegetables. And there's lighting on them and stuff. And there's music playing. And you get a cart that's on wheels and you push that around. You just pull shit out of boxes and you put it in your thing. You take it up and you pay for it. You go home and eat it. Like, which one of those is better? Like, one of them's Whole Foods. One of them's your backyard.
Yeah.
If you just erase everything, I would probably just say, look, man, like the other one seems fake.
Yeah.
This one seems real. Inherently, I'm just going to pick the real one.
Well, you also, it's also just like knowing the vegetable. Like you don't really know the vegetable when it's already pre-prepared. Like, and most people don't even buy the vegetables that they have to cut. You know, you go into Whole Foods, you're getting some white person to cut your vegetables for you. That's how premium it is there at Whole Foods.
There's, like, I don't have enough time to cut vegetables.
There's like Jackson in the back and, you know, Sarah cutting your vegetables for you. And they're like preparing it and you're paying exorbitant prices and it just comes in this food form. Whereas you pull a zucchini from the ground, you see where the stem is connected to that little nub on the end that you cut off and how that's feeding it nutrients and how it's growing in the soil and how it's creating, you know, something that you're going to consume and is going to nourish your body. That's a different thing. You get like, I get like fired up when I'm cooking anything that's from our garden, whether it's we have eggplants and herbs or even if I'm making like a cocktail and I'll go out and grab some mint and muddle it up from our garden and like just drinking that, you know, drinking that lime and tequila and mint or whatever I decide to make. And like, I'll have like a little smile on my face, like, herbs from my garden.
You know, that's I like, am drunk that's, and herbs.
That's from actually my probably the like the that's probably the time when I'm like the most like annoyingly proud. It's like I'll always tell somebody, it's from our garden.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I do the same thing.
I don't brag about anything, you know. I don't brag about shit. But
my wife, like last night, 2 nights ago, I cooked an Axis backstrap and it was like the most delicious, it's best thing I've ever cooked. If I could bottle up whatever the hell I did, I would.
Yeah.
And then last night I got home late. My wife had cooked the other part of the backstrap in the oven as opposed to our Traeger. And I was offended. I was like emotional. I'm like, come on, just turn the Traeger on. You know what? It's going to be good that way. It's not as good this way. And she looked at me and said, like, calm down. Don't get so emotional. I'm like, hey, I had to go to Hawaii for that. Like, aren't I allowed to get emotional about that? Yeah. Like, I can't just go back and get another one tomorrow. Like,
yeah.
And so I find that, you know, maybe I'm a little bit of a dick when it comes to when it comes to my wild meat that I went and got, because I can't go out and get it presented to me in a nice lighted box like it would be at Whole Foods.
Yeah. And it's just a different thing. It's also, it's a showcase of your skill. It's a showcase of, there's something very primal about it that I think is important. But I think that one of the biggest problems, why everybody's so depressed and anxious and fucked up in general, if you look at, you know, the demographics of different people and the epidemics of all of these different issues, is we forgot how to be humans. You know, we forgot how to sit around next to each other and help prepare meals and laugh and go hunting together and have these experiences that as a human organism we're designed to have. And that's, you know, a lot of what I've tried to put in my book is like, how do we get back to the blueprint of what we were supposed to do? Because in that blueprint, we're going to thrive. And there's a lot of practices that we can do that can mimic some of these environments. Like part of the thing about a hunt that's going to be good is you're going to get cold at certain points. You know, maybe you're going to get hot at certain points. Maybe you're going to have periods of fast exertion and high stress followed by super calm periods where you have absolutely nothing to do but wait. And that's what we're designed for. We're not designed for constant stress all the time. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. No rest, no break. We're designed for these. So when we're not hunting, like how do we mimic that in regular life? Like how do we mimic the experience of a hunt, you know, by going through our day that way? Well, maybe it's a cold shower or an ice bath, and maybe it's, you know, a quick sprint and then some, you know, steady state cardio or some walking. And like, how do we mimic these experiences that can get us at least a little bit closer, but even better than mimicking them is actually, hey, why don't we just do them?
Yeah. I have a real problem with depression after I come back from a long time outside.
Sure.
Like I come back from some trips I've had this year, it'd be 10 days, 14 days. You come back and my wife's like, I'm just going to give you a couple days to switch it back. Switch that dial back to regular fella. Get it back to like, stop being this dude looking around, like looking for the next, you know, really looking for the next mental cue to go do something, exert myself. I'm just kind of like riding along going, when's the next hunt?
You know? And the thing is, without the hunting experience, you would be just internalizing, bottling, compounding, not even really understanding like, man, why am I so bummed? Why don't I have any energy? Why can't I get going? And because you don't even know, you haven't even seen the other side.
Yeah.
You know, so you have nothing to compare it to.
That's why I think even podcasting is some kind of weird catharsis, because you're just, me and you sit down talking, like that door in your office here stays closed. Like somebody walks in, we'd be like, get out.
So unless if John Dudley calls.
Unless if John Dudley calls. If he calls back. he's got a special ringtone. But that kind of thing to me, like that's rare. It's become a rarity, which is sad. But in the same way, I was talking to somebody at work the other day about the idea of vacation is strange to me in some way after being a hunter. Like I live my life in this, essentially what we're admitting to is not a perfect existence. The need for vacation, you know, says to the human, hey, the thing you're doing, that's not a vacation. That's not the optimal way that you live your life.
Yeah.
So there is this other thing out there that you go pursue that shows you how great it could be. Well, you go do that thing and then you go back to your shitty life and you're like, well, that now it sucks here. Like, why would you leave your current and show what's better? Why not do the opposite? Why not go to a place that's harder so you appreciate where you are every day?
Like, that makes sense. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And also, like, the way that we handle vacation now is the only way to relieve stress. It's not the actual relieving stress by doing something challenging and actually going out, like you're saying. It's to just pound drinks.
Yeah.
You know, you just go, oh, vacation mode.
My brain.
Liquid
my
diet. Liver. Yeah. And just fucking crush as many, you know,
and then society's like, don't even get out of the pool. Stay in the pool. I'll bring it to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Just pump it in your
and
system.
Just shit food and shit drinks.
Pull the lever on this machine and put money in it. Maybe you'll win something.
And then, all right, maybe it bludgeons your consciousness enough that you relieve enough stress for a moment. But then you come back with the compounded damage that you've done and the momentum and the exhaustion and, you know, the frustration, and then you're just waiting for that next moment. You can bludgeon yourself over the head with more booze and to get out of this. Like, that's not the thing, man. You don't want to be that dude at the end of your life and be like, I wonder what it would have been like to go on a trek across New Zealand on foot. Like, I did a recent psychedelic experience. I haven't actually talked about this on any podcast, but I popped out of it and I had this incredibly crystal clear vision of me walking on foot through the Australian outback. And I was like, damn. Like, and I like knew I had to go. I could see this traced back from my youth and my fascination with Australia and the didgeridoo and, you know, Aboriginal culture and all of these different signs. Like, oh, fuck. It's like, I got to go to fucking Australia. I was like, all right,
man.
All right. So then there's that. And then there's, so at some point now I know that I'm going to be taking, like, and I think I found the trailing. I'm going to do the Larapinta Trail, which is like a 21-mile hike through the outback and see what's possible there. Maybe there's hunting available. Maybe it's just camping and playing music or whatever. But that experience now, I'm like stoked for it. Like I'm looking forward to, I get to do all kinds of awesome shit. I mean, great parties, superstar athletes, you know, beautiful girls, all those things. Like that's
tell me
what
more
I'm
about
most
that.
What I'm that's most excited about. Yeah. What I'm most excited about is, you know, it's going to sound crazy, but I'm most excited about that fucking, that trek where I just get to like turn my phone off and just cruise through a hot ass middle of nowhere place. And just, it just calls to me, you know. I think that's part of the balance of life. It's not all just like more and more. Yeah, if I had more money, if I had more dope parties, if I had more of this, like that's not it. That's, there's a place for that. Like, I love that stuff, but you can't just have that and then just have crushing it at work and then just have crushing it with in this area. Like, everything needs to be in balance. And rehumaning, like getting your fucking feet on the earth and sleeping out under the stars.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there, because they're great and they're super friendly, and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Man, I went to Nepal, it'd be close to a year ago, to hunt blue sheep. And I describe it as a hunt. Right, I say I went hunting. I didn't really go hunting. Like, I thought I was going hunting. I went there to hunt a sheep, but about a third of the way through, I could give two fucks about any sheep. I mean, I still knew I wanted to kill a sheep because that's the full breadth of the experience of what I was there to do. But once we landed in this little village in the middle of nowhere in this little town called Dule Yarsa, it was like 6 days walk from the nearest road. And we get into a room, you know, half the size of your office here. And we're talking to these people and they're translating their stories and we're drinking their Roxy moonshine out of a cup. There's a goat standing in the corner of this stone hut and there's a one-year-old baby laying on the ground and you're looking around thinking, these people have nothing. And the next morning you wake up and they're singing and there's flute playing and there's yelling, like boisterous yelling. And people are just, it's just it's like this beautiful sounds coming from everywhere and the sun's coming up over the mountain. You're like, come on, man. Like, did I not come here for this?
Yeah.
Like, what did I come here for?
Right.
That sheep that's up the mountain there, or this thing, which is perspective on what it could be or what it is for other people. And that's what I think a lot of people miss, specifically in the world that this podcast will speak to, just the perspective of what's there on the ground that you miss while you're thinking about that 400-inch elk or, you know, in your case, like, when's the right bear? I think the way you came at that bear hunt was perfect because you experienced everything up until the moment when it would happen or not.
Yeah.
But I think that's my own, I look back at my own hunting life, my own life spent outside, and I say, like, dude, I missed so much in the last 20 years. So much. But I'm glad I did, because now I know. Mm. Like, now I know what I missed.
Yeah, man. This is like, we have the best opportunity to explore this world and have a variety of different experiences. And the more we get caught up in our own desire to validate ourselves, and maybe that's, and you can even validate yourself through hunting, of course, you know, like,
sure.
And that is the trophy element. Like, I did this, look at me, aren't I great? You know, like, that's fine, but that's not, you're missing the point. The point is the thing. It's the experience itself. You know, like, you should find the joy, even if you never told a soul, you know, and if you could just do this and smile, you know, and give that, you know, give those antlers to an indigenous people and walk back, like, that should be the test. Like, could you do that and still love it? Like, could you go kill, give away all the meat, all the skins, all the antlers, everything, and never tell anybody, and just do that and hold that as like this smile you could carry in your heart? And like, would that still be worth it? And then if so, then, you know, you're probably hunting for the right reason.
Yeah. I was listening to this guy on Rogan's podcast, Johan Hari. You hear about that guy? He's an expert in depression, which seems like a weird thing to say. But he was talking about intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. Like, intrinsic, obviously, meaning you're doing it because you love it. You gain something personally from it. And extrinsic meaning you're going out and doing it based on a reward. You know, an external reward that someone else will give you based on that thing.
Yeah.
And he was talking about it in a different field and a completely different subject of what I was thinking, but I immediately turned into, like, that's it. Like, that's what my problem has been. Like, I've let too much of the extrinsic in and not done enough of the intrinsic. Not only just in going outside and hunting, but just in all of life. Like, you let too much of that in.
And we do it in so many slippery different ways. Like, we're just, the ego is just this starving validation machine. And it's constantly looking to validate itself, whether it's a glance in the mirror, or, you know, looking at your bank balance or what you've accomplished or what your job is, or, you know, how big the dick is between your legs, or like what animals you've killed. Or we're just constantly hungrily looking for validation. But I think depression, a lot of it comes from the exasperation and realizing that you're never going to get validation from anything external. You're feeding a hungry ghost. Like, you're valid because you're human. You're valid because you're part of this planet. You're valid because you are. You know, you're not valid because you do. You're valid because you be. And when we realize that, then we can stop this rabid hunt to try and prove to ourselves and others that we're, I am something. Oh, yeah, you are. 100%. You're fucking awesome. But it's not because of anything you do. It's just because you are. You know, and that's the big thing we have to. And then you're free. And then you actually do more awesome stuff. And people are like, oh my God, you're so awesome. You're like, oh, okay. You know, like, but when you're constantly hunting, we've all been around those people that are just thirsty for that validation. You're like, no, I'm not going to give you that. I'm actually going to do the other way. I'm just not
a little busy.
I
got stuff going on.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to go get my chicken license. Yeah. All
I do
weekend.
Need my chicken license, damn it.
That's going to be the title of this podcast. Aubrey Marcus and the chicken license.
We're going to have to do a video companion.
What from the book, I want to read the thing, but what from the book do you think, you know, best sheds light on this conversation? Like,
I think it's a lot of the discussions about the managing stress appropriately. And, you know, I think that's a real big one, because you think of the life cycle of like how we're supposed to live, and it's short bursts of acute stress and acute stressors, hormetic stress, and then long bouts of, you know, relaxation and decompression. And that's what you experience in any hunt, you know. And so finding the ways to do that through, you know, hot and cold therapy, through which actually, when you do find those acute stressors, it does an amazing job of reducing the chronic stress. And that chronic stress is like a fire that's just burning us alive. So going through the breath practices, like the Wim Hof breath practices, the cold exposures, the heat exposure, the types of training, the different practices that you can put around that so that it just gets your body back in line. I think that's an important topic. And then also mapping the circadian rhythm throughout the day, you know, because when you're out hunting outside and you're on a hunt, you know, you're waking up with the light, you're going to sleep with the darkness. You don't have climate control, you know, you don't have any of these other things. And guess what? You're not tired. You know, for the most part, my experience is
dude, it's amazing.
It's amazing. Right?
You get up at 4 a.m, you're hunting, and you end the day at 8 o'clock, and you're like, I could do 2 more hours.
Yeah. Because you're in you're in rhythm, like you're in congruence with the circadian rhythms of the body, of the earth. You become one with the environment again. And finding ways, even in our concrete jungle, to stay in accord with that. So when you wake up, you know, making sure that you're getting exposure to light and you're rehydrating and you're getting some movement, and then what you're doing to create darker conditions and mimic a natural environment before you go to bed, and then knowing which times are the right times to nap and rest during throughout the day, you know, generally would be in like the heat of the day. That's when the circadian rhythms will drop. And go ahead and take that nap, you know, instead of trying to pound more coffee and power through the
hunting
the
nap
evening.
Is the best nap of naps. Like, yeah. It is the ultimate nap. I was actually in Mexico last, and we started to follow the pattern of these coos deer we were hunting. And they're, you know, we were describing it as kind of like the dial of the day. Like you would click it over and it would be like this pre-dawn dusk where the deer started to move. And then around 10 a.m. they would click it over to everybody go in the shade, mm-hmm. lay down, let's chill. And you would click it about 4 o'clock. It would click into this like post sunny hot time where it was they were going to move. You look at dusk,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the animals we hunt are crepuscular, and that's what they do. But we started to get up in the morning. We'd go out there. We'd be still during that time where the deer move, and we'd be following them on a ridge or whatever. 10 o'clock would come. We'd know we'd get up on a ridge, get in some shade, do exactly what the deer were doing, and then take a nap. You know, during the hot times of the day, 4 o'clock would roll around. We'd get up and do basically what the deer were doing, hunt them the way that they lived. And I that was the first time I ever thought about it that way. It's the first time I ever realized we're basically just being the deer at this point.
Yeah. Like and I bet it felt damn good.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
And that nap during the day, I'm like, the deer's taking a nap. I'll take a break.
And right now, what are we doing? We're being the idealized model of the perfect industrial cog in the machine.
Yeah, man.
Like that's what, okay, show up at 8 a.m., work till 6 p.m., blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, but that's not an animal that we're approximating. That's not like what our body wants. That's what like the man wants. You know, like that's what.
Show up at 8 a.m. Yeah, like, how stressed are guys like trying to get to work? Like, oh my God, it's 7:59.
Yeah.
What happens at 8?
And then work all through the day. Like, it's just a weird structure. I understand for efficiency. Look, I run a company and we have those hours too. But also if I see someone napping in the middle of the day or working out or whatever, that's also encouraged. Like I realize like you can't hold human beings to artificial schedules and expect them to be at their best performance, either their happiness or their performance. So, you know, I talk about a lot of that stuff in the book too. Like how do we apply these principles that become instinctive to all other animals and apply those to a life lived as a human being in normal society?
Yeah. And all this, every conversation I have with somebody, it just seems like we always get back to this thing. Because I, other than my family, I think about hunting like almost every day, all the time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of unhealthy. But it always comes back to this like great conversation about this enriching thing that I've done and you've done. And we all kind of have experienced, and it's changed our lives, but everybody seems to not understand it and not like it. Like we both live in Austin, Texas. We're sitting right now in Austin, Texas. If you walk down 6th Street, you know, and started asking people, what do you think about hunting? And showing them a picture, most people would be like, that's some bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, why is that guy doing that?
Well, I think we've shown a spotlight on the wrong thing. You know, like what makes the news? Is it the guy who quietly goes out, says a prayer over his bullets and his gun and goes and takes an animal from a field and cries tears of gratitude and then takes the skin and puts it on his altar and eats the meat and smiles and has family gatherings? And does that make fucking news? No, Cecil the fucking Lion makes the news.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's, we're shining a light on the wrong thing. We're not, people aren't aware of what it could be. And I don't think it's not something that enough people are putting out, because the people who are doing that aren't as vocal. They aren't talking about it. They aren't posting the big post about it, because that's not what it is. So I think we can get this kind of bias as to what it is. And I think that's why it's awesome you're having this podcast. And I jump at the chance to talk about hunting, because it's not something that comes up often in my conversations, but it's like fucking essential. And it's essential to start telling that other side of it. And not everybody's going to do it like me, and that's cool, but at least like shine the light on the full breadth of the spectrum, not just shine the light on the shitty people who are remote control hunting, you know, for the sheer sport of it, you know, clicking in online and have some remote control gun. Like, that'll make national news, but the other thing will never make the news.
I can't figure that out. I can't figure that out. I can't figure out why the moral entanglements of hunting are elevated. And like, there's other things that we do that have moral entanglements that we just kind of like slough off. Like, oh, this Franklin barbecue. I love you, Aaron Franklin. Sorry. But like, that dude's just, you know, wholesale killing cows and people wait in line for it and it's celebrated. And they're just, people aren't standing in line thinking about the moral entanglements of what they're engaged in at that level.
It's because hunting is decentralized. There's no hunting collective industry, really, that it's like, it's each individual interactions, you know, so nobody has those big, deep corporate pockets to support other than maybe some gear suppliers or some people like that. But they're not in this big lobbying game. Whereas you talk about like the meat industry or the dairy industry, you know, they're swinging a big fucking stick around. And like, if you're a news company and you know, don't want to preclude the opportunity to have advertising from Real Milk or some other advertiser that's advertising on your network, then, you know, you just have to look at the influence. And unfortunately, that's the world we live in, where these dollars kind of create bias. And also, it's something that they can shock people with. Whereas that other heartwarming story about it is, you know, someone really has to pay attention.
Doesn't fit with the conversation. Yeah. I'd also think about, like, I've skied a couple times, but I'm no skier or snowboarder or anything like that. But I don't think anybody skis down that mountain thinking like, man, this could be habitat. Like this, I feel very morally, I should probably, when I get down to the bottom of the mountain, I'm going to put my hand on the ground and cry.
Because
something used to live here and now I'm just skiing down this for my own pleasure and then riding up on it in a giant chair that's attached to a cable.
Yeah.
So it's something I've always thought about, thought about recently since we've been having these good combos.
Well, we're so fucked up about death. Too, you know, like our whole concept about all death, human death, animal death, we're so removed from it. You know, death is just a part of life when you're in the animal way. Like if you're in another culture, everybody saw all things die. Like it's shocking to see something die for most people because they've never seen it. And we do weird things like pump bodies full of formaldehyde and you visit them weirdly. And it's like, whoa, man, like we're just all weird about it. And I think it's partly a lack of real spiritual understanding of where that energy goes or what happens. And everybody is entitled to their own beliefs in that. In part, just this lack of exposure to it. And then weird overexposure in TV and like so in video games and stuff where it's death everywhere, but then in reality, death nowhere. And it's just like, we're just really out of balance with what that really is like. And so, you know, I think that's something that else that if you really want to know what life is about, like, know what death is about, like hear the death moan of a bear.
Yeah.
Like understand the appropriate response for leaving the earth.
Yeah. You know, well, that's why you see a lot of hunters have gone to posting the crocodile mauls an impala video, like, or the bear kills a cub videos, because they want people to say, like, hey, man, I've seen this. Mm. Like, this is death. I know death and it's serious. Like, there isn't any way to wash that out of the experience. There's no way to take it and hose off the blood. Like, it's there all the time.
Yeah,
those bears are killing, those big boars are killing cubs like it's going out of style. And there's no, but you can't put suspenders on that bear and a hat on it and a rain jacket and make it all better.
And whatever you do, don't put gold chains on it.
Yeah,
they hate
that bitch.
They hate that.
they really they hate that, especially hate that. In the psychedelic world.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that ties it all back to, like, how do we take this thing that's enriching and good and just, I don't see anything bad about it. I don't. People can take it and make it bad, just like campers might go litter. That doesn't make camping bad. How do we take this thing that's inherently good and figure out how to talk about it?
I think there's a space for a more ritualized, like in spiritual communities, there's not a lot of hunters. And that's bullshit. Like, it's bullshit. And I think there's a space for a more ritualized hunting experience where you have somebody, maybe, you know, a Lakota elder who knows the old ways, you know, and takes someone out and is like, this is how we hunt. This is how we prepare the animals, where you go through the complete experience, from the prayers, from the songs the night before, where you're trying to communicate with those spirits and ask them to come, and then taking the animal in the field and then skinning it, preparing it, making your jerky, skinning the animal, making whatever kind of crafts out of the other parts of the animal. And like, that fucking experience would be radically transformative, you know? And I think there's a real space for that kind of, because there's all kind of yoga retreats and shit.
Yeah,
7-day yoga retreat, 14-day. What about a, you know, 7-day, 14-day North Dakota hunting experience led by Native elders, and you do a sweat lodge and kill an animal and prepare it and, you know, paint it. Like, all right, fuck yeah. Like, there's a space for that. And I think that's important. And maybe that's not going to reach the masses, but it'll at least have more voices who are kind of embracing this other side and telling that other part of the narrative. And, you know, if I had more time, maybe I should start to organize those things.
The on at retreat.
That would be awesome, man. That'd be awesome.
I'd go with you. Cause I find that, you know, the two times, we won't talk about the first time we went hunting. That's a whole nother.
What was the term?
Honey dicked? Is that?
Yeah, we got honey dicked. We got honey dicked for sure.
The first time Aubrey and I met, we were sitting on top of like a high rack Jeep getting just marauded by mosquitoes in this, we won't say the name of it, in this high fence. We got tricked into a high fence situation. Yeah. And we realized
we had some laughs though.
We had some fun
like,
with that crew. It's hard not to, but anyway, we won't talk about that. But
yeah.
You know, and just when I was driving over here thinking about this conversation, I was thinking I would almost every year try to go hunt with somebody that has a different perspective. Because sometimes I always tend to hunt with my friends or people that I enjoy time with. And of course, I know and intimately know. And a lot of times there's not a whole bunch of dynamics in that situation. You're kind of always getting the same thing.
Yeah.
And to like just say, hey, man, I'm just going to go with Aubrey and check out his, you know, just to kind of watch what he does and see how that benefits me.
Yeah, that'd be dope.
That
gotta be careful though, because I have a good buddy, really good buddy, and he went hunting with someone who he didn't really know that well, and he's like, God damn, that guy drove me crazy. You know, like
I was like, look, we'll just sit, we'll be quiet, and he was over there full on. Yeah. Yeah, no, that you gotta be careful with that. But there's, you know, there's a way to do that where you can see through somebody who hasn't experienced the same thing you have.
Sure.
Maybe there's a different way to think about it.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a different way. And that's when I was thinking, like, kicking this damn thing off, like, who am I going to talk to that can provide some different perspective? Because all due respect from all the people I know in the hunting industry, it's a bubble. It's groupthink. It's we're all kind of doing the same thing. We're super passionate. We got our heads down.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we don't ever look up and look around like, is this right? Are we doing this right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I think it would be cool for hunters to, like, you know, psychedelics aren't for everybody, but if you're called to that path, like, have a guided experience by someone who really knows what the fuck they're doing. Just imagine it, think of it like hunting in dangerous terrain. Like, you want a guide who really knows what they're doing, doesn't have an ego, isn't going to be foolish, isn't going to be stupid, but like, do something that helps show you a deeper side of the life of the animals that you have. And you know, I think a lot of hunters are kind of like, I don't want to do that because I don't want to find out that what I'm doing is wrong. Like, I'll give you the fucking shortcut. What you're doing is not wrong at the action, but how you're doing it might be able to be better, and better to learn that now.
Yeah.
You know, better to be able to carry that and face that, because all people have hunted since the beginning of time. Like, the action, don't worry about the action. It's not going to tell you not to hunt. It just might give you advice on like, okay, here's how to do it in like a cooler way.
And the way I started hunting with my dad, and I feel like if my dad listens to these regularly, he's going to think I'm talking shit. I love you, Dad. the way that we hunted was, like, if I look back now, I'm like, man, we were some rednecks. We were redneck to the core. And if I would have told like 15-year-old Ben O'Brien this conversation we're having, he'd have been like, pussy.
Yeah, right. I'm gonna get that, I'm sure, too.
And I'm gonna get it too. I'll be like, can't you just talk about like knock travel and things that are serious to hunting and not all this? But I said it in the last couple, and I don't want to repeat myself on all these things, but I find myself more interested in the philosophies of this thing than I am interested in what boots I should wear or whatever. I think because it's such a complex thing that you could talk about it forever and never get to all of it.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. Cause like I said, I don't get that chance very much. And I know we've had those conversations, and we're and we're digging them. And so I appreciate you having me on to do that.
Anytime. And your podcast is, I listen to it all the time. There's the voices and the people that you have on that I have no idea about. Like half of my followers, I think, came from your podcast, and just people that speak with open minds and just smart thinkers who have found different ways and are, you know, want to pull people along in their journey, which I find to be kick ass.
Oh yeah, man.
So
thank
you for that.
Of course.
Thanks for this.
Yeah, definitely. Anybody interested in the book, by the way, just go to ownthedaybook.com. I fucking poured my soul into this thing. So
I'm sure. I know you did. I remember talking to you like, I'll see you in a couple months.
Yeah.
I'm going to a book retreat and I'm never going to talk to you again. The hourglass is empty, man.
We did it.
We did it.
Hooray.
Bye.
Later.
And the hourglass is empty. Episode number 3 is done. Appreciate you all joining. Much respect to Aubrey Marcus for joining us for the conversation. Love that guy. He had to leave us after just the hour for the hourglass because, he is the CEO of a giant company and he's got a lot of things to do. But we had him for an hour, which I appreciated as always. And hopefully you can tell by that podcast, Aubrey is the type of dude who you can sit around and have a beer with and quote Will Ferrell movies and laugh like a teenager, but he's also a dude that you can go and sit in meditation with and talk about spiritual oneness. I mean, he really just is one of the more unique people that you'll ever meet. So hope that came through in podcast number 3. Really appreciate you joining us. So as always, go to thehuntingcollective.com for more videos, articles, all the podcasts we've done up to this point. Check out my Instagram feed at BennyOB301. That's where everything else emanates from. And check us out next week for episode 4, where I'll hope to be joined by episode 3 special guest, the one, the only, Jonathan Dudley of Knock On. So join us next week for that one. Until then, bye-bye.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.